Well, hello, gals, pals, and gentle thems. Welcome back to Can I Keep You, the official podcast of the Devon Sawa Appreciation Society. I am Allie, one of your hosts, and joining me as always is the ever lovely co-host.
Hi, I'm Lan.
We just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to our first couple of episodes and really like engaging with us on our Instagram and participating in our Q&A Thursdays. You guys had some great responses, including one that I totally was like a way blast from the past, which is somebody said they saw Devon on a show called Kid Zone, which is like a Canadian like deep dive gem. So thank you for that.
The perks of having a couple of Canadians making this is we bring out all the other Canadians from the woodwork.
Also, thanks to Mr. Devon Sawa himself for announcing our arrival to the world.
On your main.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much. And as always, we're very sorry.
So sorry. Yeah, I talked to my dad about that. I was like, oh, it's so nice. And he's like, well, why wouldn't he? And I'm like, well, why would he? He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to talk to us at all.
Right? Like, we don't have to exist to him. The dude might be getting a special guest star Emmy or a nomination for an Emmy, maybe? Rumors.
Oh, yeah. People liked him in Hacks.
Yeah. So I'm like, this person did not have to be so kind and lovely as to both acknowledge us and promote us, but we appreciate it very much, despite the fact that I did have a full body blush meltdown when I got that comment. I was ironing a shirt and I let out a sound that only dogs can hear. And my husband was like, are you okay? And I was like, I couldn't even talk. I just showed him the screen and I was like, that just happened.
Yeah. It's for real.
It's so real.
We definitely appreciate that. Speaking of our previous episodes, My family has some comments.
let's do it.
My sister said the McPizza is never coming back.
Oh.
Apparently it took like something dumb like 10 minutes.
Seven,
which nobody wanted to wait.
Fully worth it.
So she said it's never coming back. And then my dad, because we were wondering what kind of comics it was originally. It wasn't by the Archie people.
Okay.
It was the now defunct Harvey Comics, along with Richie Rich, Hot Stuff, Wendy, and others he can't remember off the top of his head. But that's obviously where Dr. Harvey's last name came from.
Yay. And then I was like, wait a second. I remember now someone once said, is Casper the ghost of Richie Rich, because they look exactly the same.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like canon before the 90s movie that Casper was literally a child ghost, so some people were like, this is not cool. I'm like, he hung out with little kids, didn't he?
like I'm pretty sure Wendy the witch was a child. Like, yeah. I'm fairly certain.
Just because she's a witch doesn't mean she should be hanging out with a 40-year-old man ghost,
right? Like, how about no?
I think that was it from my family. I can't remember where my sister disagreed with me or us. Maybe it was our use of the term glow up when he was so pretty as a child.
Maybe. But I'm just still just...
How about swole up? I'm sorry. This is why he didn't need to share.
Right? I'm like, don't acknowledge us. Just look away, sir.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I'm definitely blushing now.
Yes, and I'm just sitting here completely heartbroken over the McPizza because no one will be able to replicate that crust ever. I know they've tried, but no.
I miss chicken fajitas.
Oh, yeah.
They don't do that anymore.
They still did those breakfast burritos that took like a million years to make.
Yes, but I guess the wraps replaced the fajitas.
Okay. Remember they had sandwiches too. They like launched that whole huge line of sandwiches.
Right. Signature sandwiches.
They're like, we're competing with Subway.
Yeah, that's fine. You just keep doing your burger thing, McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thinking about McDonald's, one of the kids in my complex growing up, when I was like on my way to work in my uniform, some kid was like, McFreak. And I was like, I love that.
It's mine now.
Yeah.
But yes, thank you so much to everybody who like commented on our posts and interacted, and hopefully the responses that we gave you are sticking, because I noticed maybe some of them necessarily aren't there when I went looking for them. But thank you so much for reaching out, and hopefully you enjoy where it's going. That was the best Devin segue. Go ahead.
Where it's going, how it's going. Today we are talking about Gasoline Alley.
And not the one in Red Deer where you can get delicious, delicious donuts from the donut mill.
No. Gasoline Alley was directed by Edward Drake, written by Tom Sierko and Edward Drake. Sorry, I get to say names and it's not good. Tom produced this with Corey Larch. Photography was done by Brandon Cox. Music by Scott Curry. And editing by Justin Williams. Starring Devon Sawa, Bruce Willis, and Luke Wilson. You probably get some kind of donut in that neighborhood. I meant to look up where the street was.
Somewhere in Georgia.
Not the prettiest part of LA.
With quotes.
Oh, right.
I was like, listen, I do have some thoughts. Mm. My first thought is there is absolutely no way that a man could get street parking in front of his tattoo shop in any neighborhood in Los Angeles.
His tattoo shop for almost the entire movie. Every time it came up, I was like, this is a huge tattoo shop for one person. I don't understand. And then, of course, at the end, they mentioned that his partner left. And I was like, oh, okay.
Still, it's a pretty banging shop for two dudes and a working motorcycle. Spoiler alert. But we're just going to put a big ass spoiler alert over this entire thing. I'm going to try real hard maybe not to give away like plot twists and details. Yeah. But honestly, like, I can't make that promise that it will be totally spoiler free.
Oh, here's a big spoiler for you. Devon Sawa looks great in this movie.
Right? Like, congratulations to the wardrobe department and the hair department and the makeup department. Like, you guys brought your A game and made it work. Also, like, Luke Wilson. Yes. Pretty foxy himself.
His character was awful. And I was so confused because I didn't know that Luke Wilson could do that, because he's always kind of like the nice guy.
He's Emmett from Legally Blonde. Yeah. You know, he's generally the safe love interest with a few exceptions like the Royal Tenenbaums, which I'm not really 100% sure.
And Kelso's brother.
Yeah.
That 70s show.
That's fair.
Real dumb, real hot. Every time I saw Luke Wilson's character, I'd just be like, Luke Wilson looks real nice. And then he'd open his mouth and I'd just be like, I hate, you're so slimy and you think you're great and you're so gross.
Honestly, I won't lie. There were a few points where I almost noped out of the film because I was like, I just cannot handle the horrible shit that is coming out of Luke Wilson's mouth. I know that part of the point of it is to make me deeply uncomfortable, but I was like, the fact that it is Luke Wilson, it just, my brain is like, no, I do not accept this. Also, like, kudos to Bruce Willis, who I did notice some points where it was like clear that he was having some troubles with his aphasia, but his nonverbal body acting and presence really, it worked for the character, and yeah, he put it on there.
I feel like if somebody else had been playing that character the same way, people wouldn't have been like, something weird about this. Also, a lot of the reviews came before they announced his retiring. So I wonder if some of those people who were openly jerks online are eating some of their words. But I really liked, speaking of his physicality, there was this physical ease between him and Luke Wilson that I found very believable with their dynamics. So like the way they were physically near each other and looked at each other and all that is what told me about their relationship, not the words that they said.
Yeah, because yikes. Yikes. I'm not yikesing because like, ooh, bad dialogue. I'm yikesing because this is top shelf horrible shit that is coming out of their mouths.
Yeah.
Just awful. The premise is that Luke Wilson and Bruce Willis are two police officers who are investigating a murder of four sex workers, and evidence at the scene leads them to Jimmy Jane, who is played by Devon Sawa, and his tattoo shop.
We found these matches for your club at the scene. Sorry, this lighter from your shop at the scene. Very classic film noir thing, but with a contemporary.
Yeah. I'm gonna geek out about like the film for a second. Like film So there was the noir vibe, but I also got like a really hardcore, like Steve McQueen bullet classic, like gritty late 70s sort of action,
When the car
especially.
scene happened, I was like, someone who does stunts, were they involved with making this movie? And apparently one of the writers slash producers is the same person. It looks like he's done more stunt work than anything else. So I was just like, haha.
That was an excellent car chase. It's a movie about a murder with police in it. You would expect there to be a car chase at one point, but it was a really well done car chase. And if Devon Sawa was actually doing some of that driving because they had a lot of close in shots, congratulations,
I
sir.
have a note here. Oh, I have a note that says Dick Cops. Oh, sorry. I'm just going to read you a passage. Hi, I'm Luke Wilson. Dick Cops. Rude. Luke Wilson, such a slimy dick. But then also pointed out they mentioned all the stuff they did before actually going to him, and they did the legwork. I mean, I appreciated that line. Yeah, we did this. We looked at this. We talked to these people. We've done all of this. We've been working since like 5 in the morning, actually. Yeah, I hated them.
It's true. Also, shout out to the other star of the film, the 67 Chevelle.
Yes, I read online that car people are mad because it's actually a 71 Chevelle.
Oh,
Yep.
whatever. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's lovely. The moment, there are going to be some spoilers, but the moment where he brings the body to the police station, they're like, you know, we're going to have to keep this,
Gosh.
right? And you see this emotional journey on his face of just like he knew he was going to have to leave the car. He'd prepared himself to leave the car. I bet he even had a conversation with his car about how it's not going to be too long, it'll be fine, and they fix everything up. But you could still see, even after all that,
Oh my God.
he's just like, oh, yep.
And he's just like, I won't lie, it wasn't my kind of movie. It wasn't the sort of movie that I enjoy. There was just a lot of like, I appreciated the nods to classic action cinema, but for me, a lot of the camera work and the way that it was shot with the different colors and stuff was difficult for me to follow. Just because I have ADHD and certain kinds of stimulation are just too much for me. And it was between the dialogue and the colors and the angles and the quick kind of jumps between the shots. There weren't like a lot of long follow shots, or even in a lot of the film, a lot of stationary shots. It was just very overwhelming for me. So that's, I mean, it was a little bit of a tough watch just for me personally that way. And some movies are like that. Like I have trouble with like some Marvel movies and stuff too, where it's just a lot of like quick, anything with a lot of quick cuts, it just is, it's tough for me.
I think the cinematography was done by a guy named Brandon Cox, and I think he's done a lot of music videos. I really liked the opening credits. Very like
It
it
reminded
felt
me
like
of
the pulp novel.
Tarantino.
A lot of the dialogue, I don't think it's like necessarily the best script in the world, but film noir isn't like, it has some good lines, but I don't think they're like the most complex great scripts ever. It's a lot of like really camp lines that were like, oh, it was the 40s. Ha 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 ha. But no, it's like they've always had that. They are essentially pulp novels, and I think that people would want this to be very almost self-aware or satire, but we don't need everything to be self-aware and satire. Just let something be like a movie.
I really do have to say that I was super, super impressed with a lot of the actors in the film, not just Bruce Willis, but like Luke Wilson, and a lot of Devon Saw's character also seemed to be in the physicality of the character and like more in between the lines, like what he wasn't necessarily saying.
Also, I forgot to mention one of the very important stars of the movie, Devon Sawa's arms. So many just slow shots over his arms doing something. And I was like, yep, it's what I'm here for.
Can he be contractually obligated in every other film to kick a man through a glass door? Because that was my favorite part of the movie. I won't lie. Spoiler alert, he kicks a man through a glass door, and it is amazing.
Yeah, I think he's a bad man. I mean, like, Devon Sawa's character isn't like a great man, but these are some very bad men. And a couple of the things that Jimmy Jane does, I'm like, okay, so you're not really a good man either, but like, you're fine, I guess.
All I could think about was Hot Fuzz, where it's like, you cannot execute this amount of carnage without incurring a considerable amount of paperwork.
It's funny because he's like, do not engage near the end. And I'm like, literally, what does he have to lose right now? This is like, it felt a little Taxi Driver at the end there.
Yeah. That was a little over my own personal threshold. I was like, okay.
Speaking of the performances, every single woman in this movie, I love them. I loved Eleanor. I was like, I would go out for coffee with you.
Yeah. It barely passed the Bechdel test, and only in the very, very end of the film. Well, even maybe not even then, because there was a man mentioned in that conversation. But I was like, it felt like if the Emancipation of Harley Quinn / Birds of Prey and the sequence where she like idolizes and dreams about the sandwich is the epitome of the female gaze in cinema. Mm-hmm. This movie was very firmly grounded in the male gaze.
Yeah, it feels like a bunch of guys. Like, I'll be honest, I didn't know most of the people who worked behind the camera on this. They've done a lot of the movies that Bruce Willis has been doing leading up to his retirement, and they look like they're doing like a lot of guy movies. Not that I'm like, how dare you, but just like, you're right, that does look like what it's for. And in that regard, a bunch of dudes making that movie, for me to like enjoy the female characters as much as I did and feel like they were like actually people, that was nice. Star was super cute, apparently Miss Russia 2010.
Oh, that's pretty cool though. So the accent was real.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I just wanted to talk about with regard to Eleanor, the bouncer refers to her as one of those like 20 feet from stardom types, where she's like a backup singer. 20 feet from stardom is an amazing documentary from 2013. It was really great. It dives into the lives of actual like real life background singers like Darlene Love and Judith Hill and Mary Clayton, people who have backed up all kinds of famous people like the Rolling Stones. It's just a really cool documentary that if you ever get a chance to watch it, it's definitely worth it. I think it's on Amazon, but it was such a neat reference because it felt, I'm sure that expression is used in more than just with reference to this documentary, but it was so specific that I was like, I know this. Yeah. I watched this documentary.
Kaiser the Bouncer.
Mm-hmm.
Two things about him. He plays himself in the Baywatch remake that came out with Zac Efron and Dwayne The Rock Johnson, because he is a former NFL tight end.
Oh.
Which is a thing, I guess.
So full disclosure, we're not really sports people. I enjoy sports movies.
I love sports movies.
Giants and The Sandlot. Remember the Titans is an absolute favorite of mine for many reasons, which I will not talk about right now. One of which is Ryan Hurst, which I will not talk about right now. But yeah, like it was just such a cool specific thing. And you're right, like she was a really interesting person, and I was like, I would like for them to be in more scenes together, because I felt like the two actors, their chemistry and how easy a back and forth the conversation was despite the heavy subject matter, it felt like a very natural conversation between two people.
There's a line earlier on said by Christine, the girl he's running around with or whatever. He says, Jimmy James flirts with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, he flirted so well with all the women in this. He had such a like vibe with them where it's like he flirts with everyone. And you know why Devon Saw was playing this character? Because he has like wonderful chemistry with every woman.
Some of the interviews that I've seen recently where he's on the Chucky press junket or whatever, where he was talking about people are like always referencing Casper and everything, he's just come across as very like friendly and charming, and maybe that's just part of the vibe, even though this character is definitely not a friendly person. Jimmy Jane is not a friendly person.
No, but he does dress the same as me.
You dress like a Los Angeles car guy?
I do sometimes. I was out earlier in a yellow Hawaiian shirt.
See, that to me says Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, heavily. I have a blue one, currently have my blonde hair, and I have the things, and it's just like Leo DiCaprio was a big style influence for me from that movie.
Feel free anytime to put that up on the Facebook or Instagram. We don't have Facebook. We are officially olds, but we are not that old.
Yeah. Sometimes I dress like a stepdad on holiday.
That's amazing. That's outstanding.
One time I wore a red Hawaiian shirt to work and made myself a mustache out of cardboard and marker and wore it for part of my shift.
That's awesome. I am rather well known for my outlandish prints in the workplace. I am particularly fond of a brand called Retrolicious. I have several of their dresses and several of their like bow neck tops. I'm mostly known for like my dinosaur prints because we don't have time, but there are several episodes of other podcasts such as Film Fatales and Wasting Your Time with John Wilson where I talk about my love of Jurassic Park. I also have a huge tattoo on my left leg that is Jurassic Park themed that goes from my hip to my knee on the outside of my leg. So I have dinosaur dresses and dinosaur shirts, and that's kind of my thing. I'm basically like living my Miss Frizzle dreams despite the fact that I work in a very buttoned up profession.
Yeah, well, it's hard to get the magic bus jobs.
And I don't enjoy driving, which is... But yeah, some of the clothes that I wear on a whimsical basis is like giving my inner child the freedom that I did not often have in my actual childhood because you didn't buy girls dinosaur clothes in the 90s. Yeah. Clothes were really, really, really gendered for children in the 90s, and they still are. Also, boys' clothes have real pockets. I do not buy dresses anymore unless they have pockets because it's bullshit. But anyways, we're off on a whole tangent that doesn't involve Gasoline Alley, which is what we are here to talk about.
Yeah, I watched it with my partner. He and I really, really enjoyed it. We do like little crime movies. But yeah, I really liked all the chemistry and stuff. And Roy was a boss, the bearded fellow played by Billy Jack Harlow.
That's a great name, by the way. I thought I had seen him in like way more things, but he's only got like 4 credits to his name. And I'm like, no, sir, I'm almost positive I've seen you in a ton of stuff. But maybe I'm just getting him confused with someone who looks exactly like him and has that exact same vibe.
Yeah, I feel like Roy is the kind of guy that if I worked with him at a restaurant, he would take a shining to me. I found the key to grumpy, like, tradesmen is... make fun of them to their face with a smile, and it helps being cute.
That's fair. You just sell it. You have a face that sells
insults.
But it was really quite neat also to see this character almost feels like if his character from Final Destination had survived and gone on to live a very quiet life, because he is 1000% done with all of these people.
Yeah.
All of the time. Like, he's like, I've seen some shit and I'm over it. Please just let me live my life and do tattoos.
Yeah.
I think it was the character who is some kind of exceptionally bad screenwriter who isn't Nick Frost but looks like Nick Frost in glasses.
Oh, the guy who takes care of the girls?
Yeah.
We called him blowjob guy the whole movie because the first time you see him is at the party and he's getting a blowjob. And I didn't realize what was happening until Scott went, oh. And then I was like, oh. And then we just were trying to figure out who blowjob guy was for the rest of the movie.
Well, that's one of those things, right? Like, I didn't even catch any of that because I was too distracted by like all the like colors and the different people and the strobe light situation. And I say situation a lot. I would apologize for it, but I don't care. It's just how I talk.
Show slogan. I'd apologize for it, but I don't care. Ironically, followed by our slogan, we're sorry, Devin Sawa.
But anyways, some of the stuff he was saying was like, I am absolutely bagging my shit and getting the fuck out of Dodge. And I'm like, yes, that is what a human person would do if they were reacting to danger. You have your action hero types in these movies who are like, I'm just gonna stay and stand my ground. I'm gonna fight it out. And that's cool. But I, as a person who just really wants to be left to eat peanut butter toast and watch Saturday morning cartoons in the safety of my own home, would be like, nope, I am out, bye. And then you would have a smoke outline of my body as I ran away.
The like last line he says when everyone leaves the room is like, I should have never left Glendale. I'm like, yeah, probably not. You definitely shouldn't have taken this job.
Right? Like, yeah, no, sir. Just go home. Just go home, sir.
Yeah.
Hide in someone's basement. I don't think they have a lot of basements in California. I learned that in the Zodiac movie because apparently the Zodiac killer had a basement. Yikes.
I still haven't seen that movie. I think it's because it's like 10 years long. It's supposed to be very good.
It is very good. It is very good. And my spouse likes it. And say what you will about Jake All Too Well Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal? I'm not exactly sure how you say it. Gyllenhaal?
I think it's Gyllenhaal.
Bubble Boy.
Bubble Boy.
Say what you will about Bubble Boy. But he was really quite good in the movie. And Robert Downey Jr. is excellent. I enjoy the combination of Robert Downey Jr. and Mark Ruffalo if you'd like to see them do something serious rather than riffing off each other being science bros and Marvel. They are both in Zodiac. But yeah, if they have basements in Glendale, Mr. Screenwriter Guy, please feel free to go back to Glendale and hide in someone's basement till this all blows over.
Preferably with their knowledge.
Yeah. I mean, generally one would hope.
I mean, look what he does for a living.
That's true.
He takes care of the girls.
Yikes.
Yeah, that guy's a piece of Schmidt. They're all pieces of Schmidt.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing about this film. Trigger warning, we are going to talk about violence against sex workers and the murder of sex workers and violence against women. So if that's not for you, please feel free to skip ahead. It's the same thing that always sets my teeth on edge about films of this nature is how sex workers are treated as disposable. Mm-hmm. And I understand that this is a mystery movie and they are trying to solve a murder, and in order for them to solve a murder, someone unfortunately does have to get murdered. But there's also implications that other characters in past instances in this universe that were sex workers were also murdered or disappeared. It's a fact that that is something in like real life that happens.
Yeah, I won't get too much into it, but growing up I had a friend whose mom was a sex worker, and they never solved her murder, but I don't think they care to. I think the least believable thing in this movie was that the cops were working so hard on a case with a bunch of sex workers.
Yeah. And I mean, spoiler alert, there are reasons for that, and it's mostly cover your whole ass. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's a tough topic, and I think that we can enjoy media and still be critical of it.
Yeah.
Even if it's, like, containing lots of actors that we like and lots of moments that we like, it's just so many times it's, like, women or sex workers or teenage girls, and that's the catalyst for a man's heroic or anti-heroic journey, however the case may be. And I don't know, it wasn't my favorite thing. No. I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
They talked about his mom in this movie.
But yeah, and I mean, the implication is also, spoiler alert, that his mother was a sex worker who was also murdered.
Yeah.
We're a fun, happy, light podcast, but not always.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard when it's like, we're going to watch this movie about a guy who's getting framed for the murders of four prostitutes.
And you're like, oh, wah, wah, wah.
And like, I'm sure you could say a lot about like the fact that Eleanor was saved from being trafficked, which like she's drugged up and ready for transport. That was awful.
So uncomfortable.
But she was also like the character wrapped up in all of this that wasn't a sex worker. And so that's like sort of a movie trope as well, is she's like in knows all these people and everything, but she herself is not a sex worker. So she gets saved.
They make a point also, I thought this was really weird, but they make a point also to refer to her as a preacher's daughter several times in the dialogue. And I was like, what does that have to do with her belief? Believability or her character, or like she has a name. If you wanted to say this person without saying her name, you could be like the backup singer.
But yeah, there's that like innocent labeling. Totally.
And we don't really have time to get into the Madonna versus the horror complex. Other people have done it way better than us, and frankly we're tired. And like I said, we can enjoy media while still being critical of it, and we're probably going to end up doing that a lot because some of the things that we're going to watch are things that may not have aged as well as we might hope.
Yeah. Well, and some of them we may have never seen, but they came out back then.
That's fair.
I have definitely done a 90s movie rewatching in my time and was like, oh no. Oh no. Oh, when he's gonna go shoot someone, he says,
say hello to my mom. And I'm like, because she's in hell? Like, he doesn't say go to hell or anything, but I'm like, that's so weird.
You're like, okay.
So ridiculous. I thought it was hilarious and perfect. The other lady in this movie, Christine, is like, what do I recognize her from? It's Kat Foster. She's done other things, but I know her from Jean-Claude Van Johnson, which is a great show that Jean-Claude Van Damme did recently. He's playing himself, but it turns out that he is actually a spy. And so he's going back to work, and they like send people to work on movies as their cover for why they're there, but they're actually doing espionage. But it's also like about a man grappling with like maybe being a has-been or washed up. And so they've kind of shown that through this like ridiculous, extremely violent show, and it's so good. He also plays a character that just looks like him. My favorite character in the show.
That's fantastic.
Oh, but yeah, I was so glad when I found that out.
She looks also like Erin Karpluck, who played Being Erica on the CBC show. Like, I swore up and down until I looked at the IMDb. I was like, that's the chick from Being Erica. And I'm sorry for using the word chick. That's the lead actress for Being Erica. I swear to God. And then it wasn't, and I felt very silly.
Random 90s and whatnot connections.
Give it to me.
Ash Adams, he played Flosso.
The UFC fighter?
Maybe.
Yeah, the ex something.
He was in Lionheart with Jean-Claude Van Damme. I had to write that down after realizing what Christine was from.
My brain was like, oh, the dragon movie with Sean Connery? No, that's Dragonheart. Oh my God.
You don't remember Jean-Claude Van Damme in Dragonheart?
I have seen so many Jean-Claude Van Damme movies because my dad loves him. And really the be-all and end-all for me is when he played Guile in the Street Fighter movie. And he was like, I'm going to drive my boat up the river and go kick Bison's ass. That is peak Jean-Claude. Nothing else matters.
Ash Adams was also in one episode of Beverly Hills 90210, which I personally love.
No, that's not it. That's entertainment. It's entertainment tonight. Yeah.
It's also, I think, an outtake from Josie and the Pussycats.
Oh, probably. We do have to talk about when we get to 90s hotties. We should probably chit-chat briefly about 90210 and the unfairly hot dudes at the Peach Pit. And unfairly hot ladies. Can I say a shout out to the gentleman, to the music editor of this film, because there's some like pretty bumping songs in this, pretty excellent pieces of music. Like the car chase scene has just like a really great soundtrack.
Yeah. And some like wet, hot saxophone.
Look, I'm just going to say it. That's part of the thing that made it like quite throwbacky for me. A lot of 80s, early 90s like action movies featured like a lot of saxophone in them. Like, I'm specifically thinking of, this isn't an action movie, but I'm specifically thinking of the quintessential 90s vampire film, The Lost Boys, where there's, like,
an entire
sequence where the guy's just, like, jamming out. He's, like, a sexy dude, and he's all oiled up, and he's jamming out on the saxophone at, like, the beach on the boardwalk. Oh, man. But it's like the saxophone is very throwback action movie, sort of.
Yeah. And like the scene where he's like lighting the money on fire. Just some late 80s vibes from that one. Cool.
It was so interesting to see such a quintessentially classic action move in a scene with Bruce Willis, who basically popularized those kinds of things. Like the witty one-liner and then like bye-bye bad guys, you know.
Because as you've stated before, he's your favorite John McClane. He's your personal John McClane.
He's my own personal John McClane. Look, I'm just going to say it. I have seen a lot of Bruce Willis movies also because my dad is very fond of him. And when my dad visits, we watch movies. We watch so many movies. My Netflix algorithm is totally fucked for weeks afterwards. It's like, would you like to watch Snake Escape 5? And I'm like, no, not now. Maybe with my father, but no, thank you. Though I will say my dad really did enjoy watching Winona Earp with me, which is like a pretty feminist, like LGBTQ friendly action series. If you like Supernatural but don't love that every single woman in that show gets killed, watch Winona Earp.
And if you want to watch something with Devon Sawa that definitely passes the Bechdel test, he was in season 2, episode 6 of Hacks. The show is so good. I love it. Gene Smart is amazing. Everyone in it has such good chemistry, and Devon Sawa has spoken volumes about the experience on that set, and it was like a very sexy scene. So feeling comfortable and professional and like supported in something like that is cool. That show's very gay, but not like jokes about being gay. It's just like there are gay people and bi people, and it's just a fact of life, right? Yeah.
Happy Pride.
What else did I have? Edward Drake was a production assistant for True Detective.
Which Devon Sawa was also
in. No, he was in Real Detective. Oh, True Detective was the one you've seen.
Right, with Matthew McConaughey, and Woody Harrelson. Okay, so this is a weird comment. This is completely unrelated, but if we're talking 90s and we're talking Cheers, we do have to acknowledge Woody Harrelson. And it's like, he's such a dichotomy because sometimes he looks super foxy and then other times he just looks like your goofy neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and he does both in True Detective in the same season.
Tom Sierko. I hope.
We're really sorry if we mispronounce your name. Corrections, gentle corrections, not shouty corrections or mean ones. If we say the name wrong, like, please feel free to let us know, but like, don't be an asshole about it.
Don't be a dick.
Yeah. Rule number one.
Don't be a dick. Oh, but Tom Sierko.
Let's call him Tom.
Tom, not MySpace Tom. This is a different Tom. Tom was the stunt coordinator for Untamed Heart, which I haven't seen, but is starring Christian Slater in the 90s with Marissa Tomei and Rosie Perez.
You can't see the face I'm making, but it's basically Interested Cat is interested.
And then the other producer, Corey Large, has a couple uncredited appearances. Uncredited thug in Excess Baggage with Benicio Del Toro and Alicia Silverstone.
Yes. Okay.
Uncredited student in Disturbing Behavior.
Oh, classic.
James Marsden, Katie Holmes, and Nick Stahl, who's total like 90s kid growing up, whatever. And now he also did Hunter Hunter with Devon Sawa recently, which I have to see. Well, we will see. It's apparently supposed to be so good. Oh, and he was in one episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch playing a character named Enrique.
This sounds awesome. Like, congratulations for hitting all of your 90s beats. Yeah. Good for you.
Sophie Bradshaw, Eleanor. She is in at least the first season of Veep with Anna Chlumsky.
Oh.
90s connection.
Yes. Oh, my girl. How you scarred us all for life.
Yeah. Somebody brought up like what movie death like messed you up. And so many people were just like, where are his glasses? He can't see without his glasses.
Mine was Thackeray Binks. Wake up, Binks. Yeah. Thora Birch.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think she would have taken the job at the tattoo shop? And do you think she could have taken the job?
I think that if she was, spoiler alert, clever enough to blackmail a bunch of assholes in a prostitution ring, she could handle booking appointments for a tattoo artist.
What I meant though was, would she be able to leave to do the job? I mean, being murdered, it implies that maybe no, she couldn't take the job.
Being a secretary or an administrative person is a lot about managing expectations and dealing with assholes a lot of the time. You get them in every industry. But like, I thought you meant capability, and I'm like, oh yeah, definitely, 100%. Like, she's got great people skills, you know, just friendly face, excellent voice, you know, engaging, you know.
Yeah.
So like, yes, I think she would have been capable but getting out of a job like that, and when you're in that situation and you've basically been forced into it and traffic, because trafficking isn't always, again, trigger warning, we're going to talk about a serious thing here. Trafficking isn't always, you know, just snatching somebody up in the night and shipping them to another country, all that Taken.
Mm-hmm.
It can be getting into like a bad relationship with somebody who basically slowly over time forces you to do things that you don't want to do until you can't get out.
Yeah.
So there's lots of articles available, including one by a contestant from America's Next Top Model who was sex trafficked and ultimately lost her winnings because they found out about this, you know, piece of her past. And there's lots of stories, and we're not the best place to look for educational resources, but it is a very real issue, and a lot of people don't recognize that it's happening because mm-hmm. it doesn't look like it does in the movies where you're being drugged and kidnapped, though it can.
Yeah, like with Eleanor.
Yeah. So this is going to be a mixed bag of a podcast. Like, we're going to go into like our little outro. Come hang out with us on Instagram, chat. And all that.
We're on Twitter a bit.
Yeah, we would love to be your gal pals. But yeah, we can get a little mixed bag and things can get a little bit heavy at times because some of the media that we're going to watch is also going to touch on like real world issues that we can't discuss without acknowledging that they happen.
Mm-hmm. Especially since he does a lot of rated R films.
Yeah. I mean, Black Friday, where you get stuck in a houseware store with a bunch of zombies. Not necessarily realistic though. Arguably, some customers act like zombies. But you know, other stuff like Hunter Hunter that's more serious, we'll have a little bit more of a serious pieces to the discussion around We're Sorry Devon Sawa because you look really really hot in this movie.
We're always sorry Devon Sawa,
just eternally sorry, but thank you again for being so kind about it
and for looking at our stories and stuff. It's not at all nerve-wracking. Thank you.
Like, we're not just like weird and sweaty. But anyway, see you next time. Meeting adjourned.
Bye. So say we all.
Meeting adjourned. Can I Keep You is brought to you by the Devon Sawa Appreciation Society. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Can I Keep You Pod. Listen, follow, and leave us a review on the Podbean app or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we're sorry, Devon Sawa.
Say hello to my mom.